I'll thank Endra for giving me a captive audience. Nobody can meander outside. So, we find in our devotional process that there are 26 main qualities that we're encouraged to look for and to develop in our devotional service. So these are clearly given to Sanatana Goswami by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Srila Prabhupada even refers to them as far back as 1969 in various conversations with Allen Ginsberg even. And even in his prospectus that he wrote and published for the League of Devotees in 1956, he mentioned these qualities. So these are important qualities to know, and they're important qualities to understand. Similarly, we find that these qualities are represented in the lives of our acharyas as well. Developing any, what to speak of, all of these qualities has a direct impact on the mood of service that we portray, how we go about executing our devotional practices. The types of qualities that we develop, they directly impact our consciousness as we're executing our spiritual life. For instance, we can ask, what is material and what is spiritual? And the basic difference is one factor, and that is consciousness. For example, we have material consciousness impacting a particular object. When that object comes under the direction of the material energy, under the use or influence of the jiva, and when it is used for mundane purposes. Yet that altered consciousness of the jiva on the same object can have a completely spiritual use and be used in the service of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada, who we could easily say, I believe, was the king of analogies, he gives the analogy of a knife in the hand of a murderer or a knife in the hand of a surgeon. Very easy analogy to understand. One person is using it to detrimental purpose and the other one's using it for beneficial purposes. Prabhupada would often speak about, particularly in a morning walk in Los Angeles, these bungalows. He referred to the different houses. They are just like our places, but they're not practicing Krishna consciousness as we are. So the consciousness is what determines the spiritual or material impact of an activity. This thing's really ringing, it sounds like, isn't it? Maybe that could be fixed. It wasn't like that. Prabhupada would often say that you don't have to change anything. You just have to add Krishna. This was one of the things that he noted that made Krishna consciousness so simple. You don't have to change anything. Just add Krishna. Of course, now, we do have to change certain activities. We give up our sinful activities. But otherwise, it's all about just adding Krishna to the equation. If you're a salesperson, while you're selling, you remember Krishna. Sell books for Krishna. If you're a lawyer, while you're contesting your cases or executing them, you simply remember Krishna. If you're a garbage collector, when you're out there doing your collecting, you simply remember Krishna. So these are activities that are not individually connected, but when you inject, when you add Krishna, they all become devotional practices. It's very easy to do. Where I work, of course, people are probably tired of me, but anyway, where I work at Lowe's, I work in the plumbing department, and we have one line of faucets called the Veda Collection. Now, I'm just imagining somewhere up the food chain, there's a devotee in the mix of all this, you know, because who's going to call it? It's the Veda Collection. So, and that Veda collection of faucets is directly behind my desk. So anytime I'm forgetting Krishna, all I got to do is turn, oh, okay, the Vedas, yes, all right. We had a special order item that came in. It was in the receiving department, way up top in a huge box. And it had written in very big letters on it for Ravel. Well, Ravel, of course, R-A-V-A-L, this is the place of Radharani's birth. Now, no one else in the receiving department's thinking about that. So this is how we can dovetail ourselves. But it takes practice. It takes making an endeavor. It takes an effort to train ourselves so that we're always looking for that opportunity to inject Krishna. Now, there's a very simple way that we can see this. It's the process of sweeping. We see in the lives of many of our acharyas that this sweeping activity became a gateway on the path back to home, back to Godhead. The very idea of sweeping itself is not seen as elevated. You're basically the janitor. Different times in my life, I've held the job as the janitor. You know, you're not seen as such an elevated person. You come in at night after everybody in the offices has gone home or the store is closed, and you go in and you clean up. Maybe they think about, oh, somebody's got to clean all this up, and they try to make it a little nicer and cleaner. Or maybe they don't, this guy will clean it up, and they just leave the place a mess, whatever. Nobody's endeavoring in life to have a business card that says, janitor. This is my job. There's a funny story in this regards. Prabhupada was visiting Dai Nippon, the printing press in Japan, where he was having his books printed in the early days. And all the big personalities were there, and one of the junior men was there. And they all came forward and presented Prabhupada with their business cards. So the most junior man stayed after everyone had left, and he came forward, and Prabhupada said to him, so, what is your goal? And he took his card from the bottom of the stack and put it on top and tapped it. So that's his goal, not to be known as the janitor. I remember in the Brahmachari days, I was one of the first services I had was cleaning the basement. Because we are in the basement, we had our book room, we had our spiritual sky incense, we had our boga closet, all those things. So the basement had to be kept clean like any other part of the building. So I was sweeping the basement. My goal was that one day, the temple commander called me into his office and said, so we're changing things around. We'd like you to now be the one that cleans the temple room. So now I'm sweeping the temple room in front of the deities. Now, this was my neophyte vision that, oh, sweeping the basement's not as good. Of course, Krishna's everywhere in Krishna's temple, but the reality is that we get that opportunity to do that service in front of the deities. Now, in India, the sweeper is even less. Sweepers are considered to be the lowest of occupations. Unless, of course, you're with the broom sweeping the path at Govardhan. You see them when you go there. They're sweeping the sand. Sweeping sand? Why are you sweeping the sand? All the leaves and the footprints, making it all fresh for that day's pilgrims. That's their service. That's what they do. But in general, the sweeper caste is looked down upon and not respected to those in the bodily concept of life. So, of course, that bodily concept of life, it brings that judgmental attitude towards other positions. So the perception, it's based on the instrument being used primarily. It's interesting because here, the arrogance of sweeping is there by the fact that the broom is very tall. And you stand up very straight and you sweep. Sweeping is actually a nice thing to do because you can see clearly you've made a difference. So I'm standing up tall, but in India, of course, the brooms are very short. You have to bend over, get down close to the work you're doing. So you may be sweeping in the West, but you're very proud of the fact, yes, I'm standing up. But short and small and getting down close to what you're doing, this is certain humility develops. So this design of this broom, so to speak, is there to help bring about that humility. So we'd like to explore a little bit this evening the task of sweeping the task of using a broom, and how those two can actually be used to bring about prema bhakti, love of God. Now, we have a very wonderful example, the first one we're going to look at, and that is Narottam Das Thakur. Narottam Das Thakur was the son of a prince, royalty, great opulence and comfort, but he gave all that up to go to Vrindavan. We won't go into that whole story. There's a long history of that. But he went to Vrindavan, and he had the single-pointed desire to take initiation from Lokanath Goswami. Now, Lokanath Goswami was an extremely renounced person, living very quietly in a secluded area of the forest, and he had taken a vow, just as Narottam had taken a vow to only accept Lokanath as his guru, Lokanath had taken a vow that I will never accept a disciple. Because if you accept a disciple, you have to accept worship. People touching your feet, people bringing you, people honoring you, people speaking. I said, oh, no, I don't want that. Lokanath was a personal associate of Mahaprabhu, so he had this deep understanding. So when Narottam came to Vrindavan, Jiva Goswami took him to meet Lokanath, and Lokanath saw who he was and was introduced by Jiva Goswami. And Lokanath told Narottam told Lokanath directly, I want to accept you as my guru. I want to take initiation from you. And so Lokanath explained to him very plain language. There was no, you know, oh, maybe we'll see. No, I'm not taking any disciples. I'm sorry, you can't be accepted. So Narottam was very determined. This is one of the things Narottam's known for. So in this great determination, he decided he would render service, because we know that the essence of taking initiation from a spiritual master is to render some service and to inquire. So he decided on the service he would render. In the morning, he would wait until Lokanath had risen and taken care of his morning duties, and would then go away. And then Narottam would show up with a bucket of fresh, clean, fine sand and a broom. And he would spread that sand around the place where this activity of Lokanath had gone on and sweep away everything and prepare it all nice and clean. So this he was doing the whole time while chanting the holy name of the Lord. Some days he would consider himself to be the most fortunate. He would hold this broom to his chest. This is my source of service to my spiritual master. This is the power which is helping me obtain that spiritual destination. And sometimes he would even cry while he was thinking like this. Now, Lokanath was a very, very elderly man, but he wasn't blind. So after some period of time, he could tell, someone's coming here and cleaning this place. Someone's giving service to me. So he decided he would wait and see who this is. So one day, after doing his necessities, he went around the corner and hid in a bush. And Narottam came, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. And totally blissful. And Lokanath jumped out, aha! I have caught you. I told you I would not accept service from you or accept you as my disciple. And then Narottam gave a very convincing argument, which softened the heart of Lokanath to the point to where eventually he did accept Narottam. It was the only disciple Lokanath ever had. So by this simple activity of sweeping, the area is not very clean. It's not considered a very elevated, but by that determined process of service, he was accepted by his spiritual master and the opportunity to go back to home, back to Godhead. Of course, he was already in the spiritual world. So this is a very amazing understanding of how a simple thing like that. But as I mentioned, Narottam was a prince. Let's talk about a king. A king is even going to be more elevated than the prince and has a much more, glorious position, we could say. Prataparudra Dev. Prataparudra was an associate of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri. He's considered to be in the line coming from Gadadhar Pandit Goswami. And so he was always hearing, because at this time Mahaprabhu was in Jagannath Puri, and he's always hearing about Lord Chaitanya. Now, he was a very close associate, even one could say a spiritual associate, of Kashi Mishra. And regularly he would serve Kashi Mishra, and Kashi Mishra would come to his home for midday meals, and then they would inquire about the exchange conversations about the service to Lord Jagannath. You know, so in this way, Chaitanya Charitamrita explains he was very focused in this mood of service already, even though he was a big king. Now, this is not, just some small village king. I mean, he's the king of the state of Orissa and great parts of India and, so much influence. For some time, Mahaprabhu stayed at the home of Kashi Mishra. And Prataparudra Maharaj felt a great desire to want to get the darshan of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When Mahaprabhu left Puri and went to Vrindavan, Prataparudra Maharaj felt so much separation, he had a deity made. And he engaged 54 Brahmins in serving that deity. So in this way, he was very focused on Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and on meeting him. This was his goal. Now, during the time of Mahaprabhu's presence on this planet, it was an unacceptable fact for a renunciate in the sannyas order of life, such as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to have the darshan or the association or even the audience with the king. Because a king is a very worldly person. By his circumstances, living in great opulence, dressing very opulently, eating very opulently, traveling very opulently, all of these things. Now, internally, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was won over by the king's pure devotional mood. But externally, he had a vow to keep up. So the sharing of this desire by Prataparudra Maharaj was first given to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who asked, because Sarvabhauma was a very dear associate of Mahaprabhu's, and he asked him, "You please tell Mahaprabhu that I very much want to meet with him. I want to see him face to face. I want to give some service to him." So many, many times. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya would go to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and ask him. And as soon as he would ask, the Lord would cover his ears. Say, no. For a sannyasi like me to even look at a king is forbidden. It is considered to be poison. So even though the king was a great devotee of the Lord, he was treated as if he was an undesirable personality. So in the Chaitanya Bhagavat from Vrindavan Das Thakura, we find that Prataparudra Maharaj had a dream. And in the dream, he saw that Lord Jagannath and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were non-different. Now, many devotees understand this point, and even at that time, and of course now we all know it, when he saw Mahaprabhu dancing, he saw that his body was covered with dust from the clouds of dust rising from the earth with his ecstatic dancing. And he saw also Lord Jagannath was covered with that same dust. So he could understand these two personalities are the same. They're non-different. So this dream revealed to him, confirmed to him, the divine identity of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In the dream, Jagannath even said to him, "Just look, my body is covered with the self-same dust. You are the son of a king. Surely it is not proper to you to touch someone like myself covered in this dust." And he could understand this was Mahaprabhu speaking through Jagannath. So amazing how these things are being revealed. Now, Ramananda Roy stepped in. Ramananda Roy was a very close associate of Prataparudra Maharaj. Actually, Ramananda Roy was a minister in South India, and he desired to return to Jagannath Puri. And Prataparudra Maharaj said, yes, yes, you do this. Matter of fact, I'll give you a full stipend, pension we call it. You go and serve Mahaprabhu, and I'll pay for all your necessities. This is how much he thought it was important that the devotees serve Mahaprabhu. And then this was relayed to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Ramananda approached him, just to kind of paint a picture of what a glorious devotee Prataparudra Maharaj is. And when Ramananda was telling him this, Mahaprabhu said, yes, he quoted this verse of the Lord speaking, where he says, those who claim to be my devotees, they are not my devotees. The best of my devotees are those who are devoted to my servants. So this was Mahaprabhu's way of setting this aside. However, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya came, and he directly pointed the issue to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he said, you have to give him your mercy. You have to let him meet you. He's such an advanced devotee, such a wonderful personality. And the Lord very adamantly, you know, sometimes the answer is, maybe. You know, yeah, okay, sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. Mahaprabhu very adamantly said, no, I will never come face to face with the king. And if all of you continue to ask me to do so, I'm leaving Puri and none of you will see me anymore either. So, you know, very much the devotees are very, very distressed. King Prataparudra Maharaj, when this was relayed to him, he thought, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has descended to this earth to deliver all kinds of low-born persons. He delivered great sinners like Jagai and Madai. He has made a promise to deliver the entire universe with the exception of someone named Prataparudra. He has sworn that he will never see me, therefore I should give up my life. It moves up the food chain, we could say, a little bit. Nityananda now approaches Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Nityananda says, my dear Lord, I want to submit something to you. It may or may not be proper, but I'm going to submit it. Who other than Nityananda would have that kind of right, that freedom to speak so frankly to Mahaprabhu? The king has decided that unless you grant him darshan, unless you allow him to see you, that he's going to pierce his ears, and become a mendicant. I have no desire to enjoy this kingdom without seeing Gaurahari, the king has said. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu listened to Nityananda's account of the king's mood. And no, he didn't. He continued his hard line. No, I am a renunciate, I'm a sannyasi, I cannot associate with a worldly-minded person living in pounds and shillings, as Prabhupada would say. If I were to engage in such an activity, the people would criticize me. So Mahaprabhu was very strict in this way. He was establishing the principles and the rules of conduct for how the renounced order should live. He would say that it's just mentioned in the purports of my Prabhupada that even the slightest mark on a piece of white cloth immediately becomes noticeable. Similarly, the smallest character flaw of a sannyasi is noticed by the general public. A jug of milk is contaminated even if a drop of liquor touches it. So although King Prataparudra, this is Mahaprabhu speaking in, although King Prataparudra possesses all virtues, the very fact that he is a king means I will not associate with him. So what to do? Now a devotee by their nature I mentioned we have these different qualities we want to develop, the 26 qualities. By the nature, a devotee is free of pride and is surrendered and is without any ulterior motive. And when one is such a devotee, they're eligible for the Lord's mercy. This is spoken in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So Maharaj Pratap Rudra, he had no pride. Even though he had such an exalted material position, unlimited power, he still possessed all good devotional qualities. Now, Mahaprabhu noticed this. He noticed that Pratap Rudra Maharaj was willing to engage in even menial services, but he had to maintain this principle for the sake of society. So we just heard Mother Mukhi announcing that we have our Gainesville Rath Yatra coming up. And as a part of that Rath Yatra, someone will be given a golden colored broom and be able to sweep the path in front of Lord Jagannath. Why do we do that? Because this is what Pratap Rudra Maharaj did. When Jagannath is carried from the throne, from the main temple, out to the Rath cart, Pratap Rudra Maharaj personally, and remember, he's a king, he's got unlimited ministers, unlimited servants. You take the broom and go sweep in front of the Lord. You, yes, over with the cart, yes, sweep that area. No. He personally took this broom, and he made sure that it was a gold-handled broom, not spray-painted gold like we do, but it was actually a gold-handled broom, to show the opulence in serving Lord Jagannath. And he, although the owner of the royal throne, engaged in this menial service of sweeping the street in front of Jagannath as he made his way from the temple to the Rath Yatra cart. Now, this isn't to say the sweet streets were dirty. This was Maharaj Pratap Rudra's kingdom. Everything was kept very clean. But this is a mood of service. This is a mood of humility. This is a showing of respect to an exalted personality. And who's more exalted than Lord Jagannath? So he accepted this menial service, and therefore he became a candidate for Jagannath's mercy. This is the kind of, we might say, a roundabout method. So Mahaprabhu, of course, we know he was dancing in the Rath Yatra. That means as the Lord was coming, we don't often think of this particular part of it, but as the Lord is leaving the temple and coming to the cart, he's part of that kirtan there. We know the glorious description in the Chaitanya Charitamrita of the seven kirtan parties around Jagannath's cart, who was the drummer, who was the singer, who was the return singer, who were the dancers. This is all described in great detail by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. And so we can understand that Mahaprabhu was also seeing Jagannath make that trip to the Rath Yatra cart. And in that making of the trip, he observed, oh, there is Maharaj Pratap Rudra. He's sweeping the street. Oh, this is very good. This is very good. He's taken up a very menial type of service. And even though Mahaprabhu did not give an external public show of mercy to him, he was very, very satisfied by this service. About the halfway point of the Rath Yatra, there is a garden somewhere halfway between the Jagannath Temple and the Gudnisha Temple. And during the Rath Yatra, Lord Jagannath's chariot would stop there at midday so that some rest could be had. They could make different bhoga offerings to him and like that. And it's the custom of all the devotees, whether important or less so, to come forward and make offerings to Lord Jagannath. This is another of Lord Jagannath's mercies. Anyone can make an offering to him, no worries. We know from our standards of deity worship, going into the kitchen and cooking for the deities is Brahman initiated. This means you understand the principles of cleanliness, you understand the principles, all these different things, you know. So Jagannath would stop at this garden. And in this way, all the crowds But the Rathyatra cart would also stop there. Now, Mahaprabhu went to rest in that area. There was one section of the garden where there's a very large coconut tree grove and some beautiful, fragrant flower gardens. And so Mahaprabhu would take a little rest there from the dancing. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had instructed Maharaj Prataparudra to put on the dress of a commoner. Because remember, all the common people are being able to come and go freely to make these offerings to Lord Jagannath. So he said, you put on the dress of a commoner. That way you can get to that garden, and then you can go there and massage the feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But not just massage the feet. Say some very eloquent verses. And Sarvabhauma gave him the verses to say from the 10th canto about the gopis' love for Krishna like this, because this would bring out the ecstasies in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this is what Prataparudra Maharaj did. Took off his big royal jacket, took his turban off, set it to the side, got rid of those fancy little pointy shoes we see like that, you know. Put on just a simple cutty dhoti, some type of a simple kurta, maybe just threw a chador over his shoulders. Went before Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, worked his way close to him, began from a little bit of a distance to recite these prayers Sarvabhauma had encouraged him. Mahaprabhu was listening, yes, yes, yes. And then he sat down and began to massage Mahaprabhu's feet, which were, we could say externally, very tired from all the dancing. And he began to massage like that. And as he's doing and reciting these verses, Mahaprabhu is saying, yes, yes, continue, recite more, recite more. So the king continued reciting. Now, this indicates a couple of things. That Mahaprabhu was satisfied to hear these pastimes of the Lord, which we should also be satisfied to hear, but that the king was very knowledgeable because he was able to recite these pastimes from memory. It's not like he had to pull his iPad out. Okay, you know, it wasn't like that. They were coming from his heart. This means that he was a devotee and he knew these things. So he was reciting like this. Nectarian discussions that give life to someone who is fatigued. So this is what he's doing. As soon as Mahaprabhu heard all these verses, love ecstatic arose from him, and he sat up and he looked at Maharaj Prataparudra in disguise and he embraced him. My friend, you have given me great relief. You have given me a great feeling of satisfaction by hearing these pastimes of Krishna. So then, of course, and may I ask, what is your name? What is your name? Maharaj Prataparudra is on the spot here. Maharaj Prataparudra answered most eloquently, my dear Lord, I am simply the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. That is who I am. Mahaprabhu was even more satisfied by that answer. And then he showed his divine form as Bhagavan Sri Krishna to Prataparudra Maharaj. So how did Maharaj Prataparudra finally break through to that level of getting that mercy? By this process of sweeping. So there are many, many examples. We can see that the devotee's mood in rendering service is never one of pride. In the Nectar of Devotion, we find there are many different moods described of rendering devotional service. Pride is not one of them. Krishna does not accept that service if one offers it with pride, feeling very proud, holding their head very high. I had one senior devotee told me this many years ago, and I always took it to heart. He said, when you stand in front of the deities, you know, sometimes you see people stand with their hands behind their back clasped. He said, no, you don't do that. That's the mood of overseeing. Yes. Did you stand with your hands in front? Yes. How may I serve? I'm ready to serve. Just a small little thing. Posture, how one stands, how one, physiognomy. This is something that learned persons can look at an individual and understand about them by how they carry themselves. No one stands with their hands in front when they come before the personality of Godhead or elevated personalities, not behind. You know, you see that typical picture, the drill sergeant in the military, he's walking with his hands clasped behind his back, scowling at the recruits, yelling at them, instructing them, ordering them. Not like this, hey guys, get it together. You know, who's going to listen to that? You know, there's no stance of power in this position. So this mood of humility is an essential mood to develop in the process of devotional service. It's one of the most important of the 26 qualities. And we see that it can be developed simply by this process of sweeping. It doesn't take much. Get a broom, find a place, and do some service. I mean, after all, the goddesses of fortune, Lakshmis, in the spiritual world, they're described in the Shastras as constantly sweeping the floors of the palaces there. There's no dirt there, but this is their constant service, keeping themselves busy in that manner. So this is what we want to do. This is how we want to engage ourselves. This is how we want to present ourselves to the Lord. I may be the most unqualified. Pratap Rudra Maharaj was seen as the most unqualified person. He wasn't. So we, on the other hand, are truly the most unqualified persons. If we look at our background before coming to the shelter of Srila Prabhupada, we have no qualification for the mercy that we've been given. But by taking that essential instruction from the Bhagavad Gita, rendering service and hearing from the spiritual master, we can develop love for Krishna. It's that simple. Humility. How to develop humility? Grab a broom. It's that easy. So we'll finish there. If there's any questions or comments, I'll try to answer them. Let me switch my hearing aids over to the external side. Just a moment, Impendra. So I can actually hear what you're saying. They've got two levels, my speaking and your speaking. So, yes, please go ahead.
Thank you so much for the beautiful class. So when you said that, what's the name of the person that approached Mahaprabhu trying to ask him to accept Maharaj Prataparudra before Lord Nityananda? Who was that?
Sarvabhauma.
Okay, so, and then what was the argument that you said, that what was the argument?
That he's such a wonderful devotee, he's so serious, he's so advanced, he's such a humble devotee. Mahaprabhu, yes, all that may be true, but he's a king. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
So, and here again, this was the external manifestation of Mahaprabhu's position to society, how the renounced order behaves. We have to keep in mind that he was, we could almost say, reintroducing that renounced order's true circumstance, because many persons, they were, you know, not so strict in that regards, and we'll leave that at that. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Thank you for telling me the importance of the broom and, like, I mean, how we can, like, easily obtain the mercy, even in the most impossible circumstances, just by rendering service. I had this question, like, you have this, like, in the Guru Puja, when we sing Sri Guru Mukho Padma Vakya Chitete Koreva Vakya, when Narottam Das Thakur went to Loknath Goswami to, like, ask for initiation, I mean, One of my senior devotees, he told me that initiation is just a formality. And if you accept one as your guru from your heart, he is your guru. Mm-hmm. And then also, I mean, whatever the guru says, you need to follow it. So if the guru even says, I'm not going to give you initiation, then like, why would he kind of like, you know, implicitly forcing him to get him initiated, you know, even though he didn't want to.
How to tread carefully on this answer. We may say that there is no need for formal initiation. Shastra disagrees. We may accept the spiritual master in the heart. Still, externally, proper diksha is required. It is a formality that is necessary for stabilizing our path back to home, back to Godhead. Otherwise, we're free to accept and reject according to the mind's decision. Oh no, my guru told me this. No, what guru? This is, you know, one of the advantages of, and I'm not dismissing anybody otherwise, but I'm saying this is one of the advantages of having a smaller group of disciples is being able to directly instruct them. Srila Prabhupada, of course, instructed all of us through his books. My point being that someone may say, oh, formal initiation is not required, it's just an external thing. Shastra disagrees, and I'll leave that at that.
Right.
This side of the room, anything? No? Yes, take the microphone there, please.
Thank you so much for the enlivening class. In Krishna consciousness, we cannot know these stories and the broom and so on and so forth, but you can even, if you're proud, you can even sweep with pride, you know? You can say, I'm doing this small service, so I'm the lowest of the lowest, but in your heart you have this still pride because I'm sweeping the floor, I'm the lowest. So, you know, we get in a loop of an action, it doesn't transform in the heart. So, can you give us a little more?
Purification requires internal and external, motive and activity. If we externally are appearing very humble, but internally we're very attached to name, prestige, followers. What's that? I had a guy, I was in the store and one customer came in and he was very upset about something and this and that and then he was being quite unreasonable. And I said, well, I'm sorry. He said, do you know how many followers I have on Instagram? And I said, no, I don't, but I'm happy for you. So if our mood is, I'm doing this very humble thing, but, this is why all the shastras encourage to give up false prestige. Natanam janam sundarim. Mahaprabhu himself says this. This is the qualification he presents. That we have to give these things up. If internally we maintain some appreciation for our own position, then we're only fooling ourselves. And quite frankly, any serious devotee can see that in someone else. So yeah, you're absolutely right. It's not only an external thing, it has to be internal as well. We have to embrace that with the heart. And that means that we have to engage in activities that will bring us to that level of purification. This is why in the refined process of developing devotional service, certain things are accepted, certain things are rejected. In the beginning, okay, just take prasadam. I mean, so many things. There's that famous story, and I don't tell this badly anymore because it's all over every book that's written. There's that famous story of Shyam Sundari when he was engaged in carving the Jagannath deities. And Prabhupada came to see how the progress is, and on top of Jagannath's unfinished carved, half-carved body was a pack of cigarettes that Shyam Sundari was taking his cigarette break. Prabhupada simply touched and said, don't let such a small thing stand between you and Krishna. Didn't make a big deal of it, but the level of purification was expected. Now you're doing this, so okay, we just come in the door, just use as many gloves as you can. Yeah, I remember as a brahmachari, one full plate of sweets, one full plate of rice, one full plate of sabji, one full plate of halva, 10 cups of sweet rice. And I'm not making this up. This is what we did. We were fired up brahmacharis. Of course, we're all, none of us are renunciates any longer. But the point is, at a certain point, okay, that's necessary. Okay, now let's talk about refining. So, yes, you're completely correct. Internal and external both have to go hand in hand. Another question over here?
Hare Krishna, so nice to hear from you, Charuatma Prabhu. Yeah, thank you for this question, Gandini, also. And it brought me to this thought that I had one time. This is when like this realization kind of struck. One time I was asked to lead kirtan for Gaur Aarti, and I was singing in front of the deities, and it was packed. And I was like nervous and scared, but then I also was proud. There was like pride in my heart. And I kind of like noticed that, and I had no choice but to laugh at myself, because we might be asked to do services that are that invoke pride naturally, and what are we supposed to do? Decline them? Devotees do that. There are some devotees that won't do the service because they feel themselves unqualified, and that's beautiful. But some
Lokanath Goswami.
But some devotees don't have that mood. Some devotees' expression of humility is that I'm going to do this even though I feel pride, because it's being asked of me by the Vaishnavas. And so I'm curious about like how to process that and integrate that within ourselves.
There is that also. And that means that we have to embrace the service given to us, but be detached. What's that Krishna says in the Gita? You're allowed to be attached to your service, but you're not allowed to be attached to the result. So the service is to sing for the deities. The result is, oh, I'm such a good kirtan here. Boy, nobody plays mridanga like me. And did you hear that class I gave? So, you know, we have a service that's given to us, and the activity of executing that service is the purification in and of itself. But we also have to work internally, as Mataji was saying. We have to refine ourselves. We know when it's there, just like you said, you caught that. So we have to refine that. That takes practice. That takes, you know, repeated engagement in devotional service. I mean, imagine you're sitting in front of Prabhupada, and Prabhupada did this from time to time, and turned to someone and say, now you please speak. You know? And Prabhupada wanted to see the disciples were being trained how to do things. So we have to do the service, but we have to also purify ourselves. It's a dual process. Yeah. One more question in the back there. Just wait for the microphone. That way everybody can hear.
I feel like there's another example of the broom's usage for like beating back the mind and such. I feel like we're getting to the subject of the other side of that coin. I thought maybe you could give some example there.
Well, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did mention that one should beat their mind with the broom. Now, this reflects back to your point, is that the mind is going to try and trick us into these different falsities. Well, we can use the broom to beat the mind. But here we're talking about the advantageous use of the broom for helping us develop that humility and go back to home, back to Godhead. So we'll finish there as promptly at 6 o'clock as we're supposed to. Thank you all very much for coming. Enjoy Krishna Prasadam. Hare Krishna.